everybody, welcome to another thrilling episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and back with me in the studio is Maxim for episode number 3 on Spark. How are you?
Oh yeah, it's number 3. I'm good, thank you. Yep. How are you doing?
Good. Always a pleasure to have you in the studio. So for those that haven't watched the first two, shame on you. why don't you take a second to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Maxim Lukyanov, program manager on Spark in Azure HD Insight Service.
Okay.
And we are doing these episodes on Spark performance tuning.
Okay, perfect. Yes. Awesome. All right, so let's recap just very quickly the first two episodes, right? The first one is just kind of an overview of Spark 1.x and 2.x and kind of
all of the great improvements in 2.x.
In 2.x, yeah. And then the last episode, we really focused on some of the performance techniques.
Basic techniques.
Yeah, basic techniques, right?
Yeah, exactly. So basic techniques, we went through many of them, and they kind of lay foundation for your good performance.
Yep.
Today, we are going to talk about kind of standard techniques.
Okay.
That rely on these basic techniques to be already in place.
Cool.
But this you can call kind of a workhorse of this good performance in Spark. So that's a core techniques that you need to care about if you want to get good performance.
At some point in this, because we looked at, you know, in the last episode, are we going to talk about the differences between the techniques we talked about last time versus these techniques and how they differ?
Not necessarily. They are all additive. It's just basic techniques talk about some kind of things that you need to put in place before you
kind
can
of best
start.
Practices type of thing.
Yeah,
right?
Like when you get started with Spark, like how do you put data? Which format do you choose?
Okay.
Like what's the size of your executors? Like all of those things that you have to like make decisions on before you can actually start running something on Spark.
Okay, and these standard techniques are additive on top of that.
Yeah. So. Like if you, a good example for that would be if you did all of the basic techniques that we discussed in the previous episode, you would get already somewhat good performance.
Mm-hmm.
And we can, if you remember, we had this test query that kind of resembles kind of a more complex query that we have in production.
Yeah.
So with that basic technique in place, you would get performance on this 10 terabyte data set of about 1.5 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Which is not bad already, like for 10 terabytes, kind of uncompressed original data.
1.5 minutes, not bad.
Yeah, doing some pretty significant aggregations in 1.5 is nice.
Okay.
And you wouldn't get it here if you didn't use like the basic techniques, like didn't use parquet format or didn't use partitioning. So all of those things kind of get you there.
Okay.
But if you also remember in the first episode, we showed the kind of our target, and the target is, hey, we can get as fast as 14 to 17 seconds.
By applying some of those basic.
Yeah. So how do you get from like 1.5 minutes to 14,
14 15, seconds
14
on
seconds.
10 terabytes of data? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty significant improvement.
Sure.
And this is exactly the standard techniques that we are going to discuss today that will get you there.
Yep. So we talked about the 1.5 minutes last week. So now we're going to talk about what do you need to do to get that down to 14 seconds.
Yeah. Whew,
all right.
Exactly.
Let's jump in.
So that's a very good goal.
Very good goal. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but in order to start on that, we need to talk about some join types. So basically the standard techniques, there are three of them that we'll discuss today, but the primary one is around joins.
Okay.
And joins are kind of notoriously kind of a common thing that is happening in data, in small data, in big data. So big data is not exception, Spark is no exception. And just to talk pragmatically about the things, the specific things that you need to care about as a practitioner, there is these two types of joins that are available in Spark, namely a sort merge join and broadcast join.
Okay.
So when you join data, like imagine your sales data and you want to join like, hey, what's the product characteristics of a particular sale. So you do this join.
Mm-hmm.
And Spark can actually perform it in two different ways, using sort merge join or broadcast join.
Okay.
And sort merge join is based, it's a very universal technique, but it's based on the idea of, hey, I'll sort the data on the left side and I'll sort the data on the right side. And then when they're in exactly the same order, I can kind of join them in a very nice kind of a merge fashion.
Okay.
So that applies to any size of the data. It's very universal.
Okay.
But it requires sorting of both of those things. And if one of the data sets is very large, then you'll need to sort the very large data set. That can be very expensive.
So time consuming, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. So alternative approach is broadcast join, where if one of the sides of the joins is small enough to be sent to executor or worker node in your cluster, then you don't need to sort the other side of the join. So you can just send this data, a smaller data set, to everyone that is performing this join. And then in place, every worker node will be able to join the data.
Oh, right there at the worker node. Okay, yeah.
Right there at the worker node without sorting this other side of the join.
Okay.
So that is very helpful when you can first, we can do that if one of the sides of the join is small enough.
Right.
And that allows you to eliminate this sorting operation, which is very expensive.
Okay. Awesome.
So if that's basically two join techniques, and Spark can do both of them.
Okay.
And depending on which one it does, you'll get different performance.
Do you specify, or do you let Spark specify?
Exactly. So that's a kind of a crux of the question, because it's kind of both yes and no to answer your question. And this is where it gets interesting. Like, how, when do I need to specify it? When I don't need to specify it? And how this actually works?
Okay. Okay. Is there a default if I don't specify anything? Is there a default that Spark will apply?
Yeah, so the default is simple. The default is it won't do the magic thing. It will not do the kind of automatic smart selection of things.
Okay.
And it will go with sort merge join by default.
Okay,
By default, it will sometimes do a very expensive operation.
Gotcha, okay. Yep.
And just to kind of point out additional aspects of joins, not only kind of a type of the join is important, but also order of the join. Imagine like you're not just joining kind of a catalog of your products, but you're joining kind of other reference data to your primary data set.
Right, okay.
Then you have multiple joins happening at the same time, and the order of joins also matters. If you join kind of a more selective data set that will trim number of rows in this large table that you're joining with, then everything else after that point will have to deal with much less data.
Okay.
The ordering of joins is also very important, and again, there is some decisions to be made by Spark or by you if you want to have good performance.
Okay. That makes sense.
So now we can take a look at our queries and see why this 1.5 minutes happening, why the original query was slow.
Yep.
So if you look at the query graph, so that's an unoptimized query graph plan, and you can see that there is this basically sort merge joins happening. So that's a default kind of a choice by Spark, and it put them like in many places. Like if you look at the second.
So there's a number of sort merge joins going on.
Yeah, okay. So there's a number of sort merge joins going on, but the most expensive is the first one. If you look here, you can see that, hey, this one took 1.8 minutes. Well, it's even more than, but that's the maximum. So it's resulted in kind of significant time here.
Okay.
So if you look at the optimized join, so that's the one that we manually optimized.
Okay.
You'll see a different picture. So now you see
a different graph.
Yeah, so this nice long blue rectangles, and if you look inside of this nice blue long rectangles, you'll see that, hey, it's using broadcast hash join.
Okay.
Although broadcast join by itself isn't very fast sometimes operation, if you compare it to the sorting of this large table, it's much faster.
Right.
So that's kind of the single kind of a technique that you can apply to this data set or to this query to switch from 1.5 minutes to 14 seconds.
So you can look at like the results, these two graphs, and go, hey, this one's doing quite a few search merge joins versus, right?
Yeah.
Help you troubleshoot, yeah.
So that's a great point. Basically, whenever you have you embarking on this performance optimization thing, this query graph tool that Spark provides is very powerful kind of tool to spot for the problems. Like if you see that there is some sort merge joins, then you can check, hey, how long Spark spends doing this thing, and then consider, hey, maybe you can do better.
Okay. Yep.
So that's a kind of the root of the problem. And if you switch back to how it works and how we can actually accomplish this broadcast join thing, then this is the place where things get interesting, because we are talking about Spark.
Yep.
And Spark is a very fast-moving kind of entity, and that's good, but also it makes it kind of hard to explain all of the things that are going on.
Okay.
So let's take at the picture. So this is the kind of a structure of the query plan, or query planner that Spark has, and you can see it like in almost every presentation about Spark, and it was available like from version 1.x. And the thing about this query plan is that it's slightly confusing. So this cost model that is presented here is actually, this is a key moment where Spark needs to make the decision between sorting or not sorting.
Oh, so okay, so that decision is made here.
Yeah.
Even long before, even long after it looks at the query plans.
Yeah, that's correct. The point here is that the versioning. So
yep.
Although this kind of picture, nice, very very nice picture that assumes very nice cost model
yep.
Existed from version 1.x, the cost model until version 2.2
mm-hmm.
Was actually very simplistic.
Okay.
It couldn't make a differentiation between large table that was filtered down into a small table or just a large table.
So this is new in 2.2. The cost model is new in 2.2.
Basically, yeah. For the practical purposes, before 2.2, you couldn't rely on cost model to do any kind of smart decisions. Basically to do all of that stuff manually.
Okay. Yep.
But there is a great improvement in Spark 2.2, which is currently not available. It's in release candidate form right now, but it's already there. And we'll actually try it.
Okay.
But in Spark 2.2, there is a cost-based optimizer.
Yep.
That kind of is more aware of the sizes of the data, and actually we can now say that really does have the cost model that can do some smart
makes
decisions.
Better business decisions yeah. based on size of the data and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. But before Spark 2.2, and probably most of the customers right now are still on Spark 2.1 or 2.0, so they're in the world of today where this magic is not available. We'll need to review kind of both approaches, like, hey, what do you do before 2.2? And what you can do in
2.2.
Starting in 2.2.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So just to illustrate what kind of problems an old Spark has, so if you look at this again, non-optimized query plan.
Mm-hmm.
So the key thing that Spark overlooks here is that if you look at the number of rows that goes into one of these tables, you'll see that after filtering,
mm-hmm.
The number of rows goes down to like just 1,000.
Okay.
From like 27
million. Yep.
Which is a very small number, and that should enable Spark to like just broadcast it to this second table and avoid this sorting thing. But that's a limitation of the Spark before 2.2, Spark 2.1, where it doesn't have enough statistics or knowledge of data to make this kind of estimated.
I see.
Hey,
yeah.
After filtering, there's going to be very small number of rows, so I should be able to push that down using the broadcast
showing, yep, okay.
And in 2.2, that is exactly what's fixed. There is no statistics kind of gathering mechanism where Spark can learn some properties of the data that will enable it to kind of make more smarter decisions.
Cool, okay.
So now let's dive into this. Kind of a guidance. So for Spark 2.1, how we can solve this, and for Spark 2.2.
Okay, yep.
So if you look at the very simple drawing, let's say this one, where you have basically two tables, a fact table and some dimension table, that's very common in kind of a star schema type of queries, very common queries in data warehousing. And we are just trying to join them.
Yep.
So how do you kind of tell Spark to do the one join time versus another.
Okay.
So the first mechanism in Spark 2.1 era was, hey, you can just tell Spark to just start broadcasting larger tables. And this setting is what allows you to kind of increase the threshold.
So you're forcing a broadcast join at that point through that segment.
No, it's not exactly forcing. It's this setting says, hey, if the table is smaller than it fits into this size, than broadcast.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's not exactly forcing, but it's allowing Spark to broadcast larger entities.
Sure. Okay. Yeah,
but the problem here is that it's very limited technique because it talks in terms of table sizes. So it doesn't take into account the filtering that can happen.
Okay. Okay.
So it's not forcing anything. So if the table is large enough, broadcast join will not happen.
Okay.
So in order to force it, actually, there is a way to force it. So using this broadcast hint. And in Spark 2.1, it's fairly limited in terms of how we can do it. It's only available in the Python APIs. So it's not available, this hint to do a broadcast join, a force broadcast join, is not available in SQL. It's only available in Python
so
APIs.
So just Python, okay.
Yeah. So for this query, you would need to first convert it into a data frame Python query and say, hey, I'm grabbing these two tables separately. And then I'm doing join, the same join here, but using just data frame APIs.
Okay.
And then I have opportunity to have this hint to force a broadcast join. So this is exactly what we did in our optimized query. And after we set this broadcast to all of the right joins, we got to the 14 seconds performance.
Wow, okay.
So now in Spark 2.2, because it's just going to arrive soon, we have better way to do that.
Okay.
And both in the automated way and in this kind of a broadcast hint way. So now with cost-based optimizer, you can ask Spark to analyze tables. So this statement, SQL statement, will kind of allow Spark to gather statistics about table and columns. And for columns, you have to specify every column that you care about.
Okay.
But after you gathered statistic for all of the tables and columns participating in your query, then Spark becomes equipped to make smarter decisions.
Okay.
Another notable thing, you also need to enable cost-based optimizer because by default it's disabled. It's the first release of cost-based optimizer,
okay.
So it's disabled by default.
Turn it on. Yep.
And there are actually multiple parts of it. Like one, the basic cost-based optimizer is enabled separately from the join reordering function.
Okay.
So you need to pay attention to that.
How much, if I'm going from Spark 2.0, 2.1 to Spark 2.2, and I've, can I stay with kind of the language we have here, or is the recommendation to go, I really need to think about, you know, using the cost, you know, the cost-based optimizer. And if so, am I going to do some level of query rewrite a little bit, or?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Basically, if you have done already the job of manually optimizing your query and specifying where the cost, where the broadcast join is more efficient, then you can just stay in
just
that
leave
world.
It there. Yeah.
So that's exactly why we have this optimized query where everything is manual.
Right.
And maybe not as convenient as writing it all in SQL.
Okay.
But once you've done it once, it just works in 2.2.
Okay. Is there a benefit of going of doing? If I go to 2.2, is there a benefit of maybe doing that way?
Well, assuming that this works, the benefit would be is that you don't need to do all of this analysis to specify which joins should happen how.
Right.
Because it's not like a simple rule, like, hey, make everything broadcast.
Right,
well,
right.
No. First, it will not work on the larger table.
Sure.
Second, in some cases, it will even be slower.
Okay.
But with the statistics, the nice thing about that is that it will just work. Like for new queries, for kind of permutations of your previous queries, or different filters, because different filters will result with different data sizes. So for all of this kind of multitude of variants, statistics will provide you with kind of robust automatic behavior.
So if I'm happy with this, I could stay with this.
Yeah.
But if I want to maybe to get a little more performance, I might look at implementing 2.2 functionality.
Yeah, certainly. At some point, it's worth kind of trying this automated way. And if it works out of the box, then you can just stay with it. It requires all of this maintenance operations. Like you need to analyze tables, make sure that you keep statistics updated if you update tables. All of that kind of becomes harder. And there is a little bit of magic of this new technology of cost-based optimizers that you need to kind of try it a few times before you actually can trust it.
Yep, that makes sense.
Yep. So that's a nice way of doing it automatically. And also, another additional feature in Spark 2.2 is now it's easier to provide an explicit hint to Spark where this broadcast needs to happen.
Yeah.
So now directly in the SQL language, you can use various syntaxes for this broadcast hint. So you can just inside of SQL, you can say, hey, force a broadcast for this table.
I see. Okay.
And that makes it much simpler, and actually various syntaxes of this thing of the hint are actually compatible with Hive and Impala syntax, so you can potentially use them in the same queries against different query engines.
Sweet. Okay, very cool.
Yeah, so I installed this Spark 2.2 release candidate and try it out on our test query, so let's take a look. So when we run this query with a cost-based optimizer, we got 17 seconds.
Okay.
So
down for a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's almost, well, actually it is within the margin of error compared to the 14 seconds.
Yep. Okay.
So we can look at what cost-based optimizer came up with in terms of query graph. So it looks very similar to the manually optimized query graph. So if you look closer into this query, you'll see that, hey, the first query is actually the same. The order of joints is actually the same one. You can see that.
Yep, the filter filtered down to still 1,300 rows up there. Yeah.
Yeah. So yep, that's the same. Selectivity of the join order is also very good. You can see that the first join is a very selective one. So it trims down from 7 billion rows to 29 million, and subsequent joins don't change that number too much.
Okay.
The only difference is Spark chose to still use sort merge joins for the later joins.
Okay.
And that's probably because the sizes of the joins are not that big. So sorting actually here may be even more efficient than broadcasting.
Okay.
So as a result, it gets pretty good numbers.
Okay.
So again, it's a release candidate. So we haven't tried this cost-based optimizer in production. So your mileage can vary, but so far, it looks pretty promising.
Awesome. Yep. Yeah. It does look promising. Yeah. Still 17 seconds isn't anything to sneeze at, right?
Yes.
So that's still pretty good, down for a minute and a half.
And the best part now, it just happens for you. You don't need to think about it.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
As long as you do all of this statistics things.
Awesome.
So let's. So a couple of other techniques that are very important for performance, and sometimes they just destroy your performance. But hopefully they happen less frequently.
Yeah.
But still, it's very important to keep watch for them. So it's
okay.
Basically data skew and data outliers. And the best way to understand what data skew is to take a look at the example. So here is our example of data skew. So in Spark, we have another very nice tool, which is event timeline, which shows you what was kind of a sequencing of tasks executed on the nodes of your cluster.
Yeah.
So you can see that on first node, there were like four tasks executed here. And for each node, you can see this number of tasks executed. And the length of this task is the time that it took to execute it.
Sure.
So it looks that most of the things executed very quickly. And then to illustrate the outlier, or data skew, sorry. There was one smaller one. Let's scroll to the big one. Yeah. And that would be the example of data skew, where one of the tasks suddenly just exploded in time.
Okay, yeah.
So what happens here? So think about an example, very simple one, where it's kind of obvious. Like think about a scenario where you want to aggregate like a number of flights from different zip codes.
Mm-hmm.
And in every city, there will be a single zip code where there is actual like airport.
Yeah.
And for that single zip code, all of the flights will be accumulated in that one. So if you distribute your computation by zip code, so every Walker node will compute for different zip codes. Yeah. So most of your Walker nodes, or actually all of them except one, will be doing nothing because there is no flights if there is no airport.
Right, yeah.
And only one will be computing all of the flights for this particular zip code.
Right.
So that's how this kind of data skew happens, is when you have a natural skew of data depending on the column that you use as a distribution factor for your data.
So that's an outlier, but maybe a valid outlier because this one airport in the zip code is doing all the...
Yeah, there is just naturally data is structured in such a way that there is this distribution way of your choice just doesn't distribute anything.
Right.
Like,
So the key would be then figure do your homework as to how you're going to distribute your data evenly.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that would be the workaround, like redistribute your data in such a way that it actually kind of starts using all of the nodes. And one way to do that, so we are talking about this data skew. So one way to do that would be, hey, so data skew, much more. Yeah. So mitigation. Yeah, we are looking at the mitigation. So one way would be, hey, don't use the zip code as a distributing factor.
Yep.
Use some other column to distribute. Maybe do some pre-aggregation that is based on like a flight ID.
Oh, okay.
And then your flights will be distributed across all of the nodes. They will be pre-aggregated. into some smaller number, and then finally you can do your zip code aggregation. But now the job will be much less for this final job to aggregate, because all of the data will be pre-aggregated in some much smaller
sizes. I see, okay, Maybe throw out the ones that, you know, zip codes that don't have a...
Or be even smarter than that. Don't do the job that you don't need to do.
Right, okay. So you're saying basically be smart about how you... Right.
Yeah, okay. So choose the different aggregation key.
Sure, okay.
And use pre-aggregation. And more generic variant of that is you can even use bucketing column. So which means that you can select, you can choose some column with high cardinality across your data, and then you hash this column value into a bucket ID, and then you pre-aggregate using this bucket ID. Okay. That guarantees that your data will be evenly spread across your Worker node, and at the final stage of computation, you can do the aggregation that you're interested in after bulk of the work was already performed.
I see. Okay. Cool.
So that's data skew. And another variant of that problem is called here outliers. So that is slightly different problem, but happens much more frequently than data skew. Mm-hmm. So, and here's another timeline where, again, there is a bunch of tasks going on. And I believe this one, yes. This one illustrates kind of outlier. So what is outlier? So if you can see here, the tasks are fairly kind of constant in their size. So there is a long task, and then there is a shorter one.
Okay.
But sometimes one of the worker nodes or one of the executors, something will happen to it, and it will start, it will just slow down, or for some reason cannot like process as fast your data. And then it takes much longer for this worker node to compute the same task.
Okay.
And everybody else in the end kind of sitting and waiting for this one guy
executor to
complete. Basically, 100 an army of 100 soldiers is waiting for the last one to finish the to finish the race.
Right.
And doing nothing while while doing
hurry
that.
Up, we're waiting.
So that's not that's efficient funny. Use of resources.
Yeah, yep.
And
that's funny. Yeah.
if you can keep going, you'll come up as all kinds
exactly.
of interesting
all sorts of examples here.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the mitigation here, this picture actually illustrates mitigation. So basically, you need to make sure that you have more work available at all times. So if somebody gets stuck with processing one single chunk of work, other worker nodes, other executors have some other work to do while this guy is finishing up.
I see. Okay.
So basically, in this picture, you can see that, hey, well, this worker node executed or processed just a single task. You see, there is a one task.
Mm-hmm.
Others actually executed two tasks.
Yep.
And that's why basically what we did here is we moved, because Spark uses kind of dynamic task scheduler, it will determine that, hey, these guys have nothing to do, I'll just move the work of this worker node to the already available worker nodes to do it. Kind of the slow guy will not do much work. It will do just the minimum work to just get to finish with everybody else.
So this isn't necessarily bad. What we're looking at isn't bad necessarily.
Yeah. So this problem is already to some degree mitigated here.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Mitigated in that these guys were done. This is one guy lagging along. Hey, we'll move and get these guys working on something else while this guy finishes.
Right? Yeah. So you can see here this kind of white space illustrates how much kind of resources you wasted. So this is the actual idle time for this worker that it was waiting for the guy, for the slow guy to finish.
Okay.
It's not too bad. It's like just we wasted here maybe 15% or something.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, not bad. Okay. Yeah. All right. Again, not bad. Just depending, if there's a lot of space, then we have an issue. Right?
Yeah. So if you get to a point where you're like wasting 70% of time, then there's certainly a avenue for improvement.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so that's kind of three core problems that happen in Spark. Again, Spark is a very powerful engine, but it doesn't have all of the smarts of the traditional database. Like now it got smarts to do some smart choices for join types, join reordering.
Yep.
But it still cannot do like automatic data skew, kind of pre-aggregation. It cannot fix there, the
do
outlier
we have, issues. Do we have control over some of the things we looked at? Like we have control over, like we saw from a join perspective, but from an outlier and data skew, you know, in the mitigation type of scenario, do we have control, or is that, you know, can we address some of those issues? Do we have control how we address some of those issues if we see that?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now it requires kind of a manual intervention.
Okay.
So as we discussed, for data skew, you would need to go and change your query.
No,
you need
to
change the aggregation key.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Spark
yep.
will not do it for you automatically.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And for outliers, you would need to increase number of tasks. This is also parameters that you control.
Oh, that's okay. So if we see just the long tasks.
Yeah.
Right. We may need to create, you know, add more executors.
Then
more
you
nodes.
Need to look at, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
Why is that? And then come up with a strategy of how we can avoid it, how
that
we can mitigate it.
Okay,
so this still work, but again, so progress isn't staying in the same place, and hopefully in the future, more of those problems will be automated.
Sweet. Okay, cool.
Or solutions to this problem.
Awesome.
Will be automated.
Okay. So great. So what I liked about this is some standard things, not anything. These are kind of obvious. Obvious.
It's a
things.
Very standard problems in big data space.
Yeah, and how you address those. And that's why you kind of call it, you know, standard performance, right? Things that, you know, we kind of look at that, hey, just things to think about again as we're going to troubleshoot.
Yeah, absolutely. But also you wouldn't want to kind of skip it. Like you wouldn't want to miss it. Like the difference could be like a 7x in terms of performance. So you should do kind of this check if you're into performance
optimization. Well, we saw going down from 1.5, you know, a minute and a half, you know, 1.5 minutes down to 17 seconds just by doing some of these things, right?
Yep.
We're, you know, looking at the join. So awesome.
It's a very effective technique. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Oh, this is great. All right. So
one last thing.
One last thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you're wondering how I can run Spark 2.2, which is not yet released. So here is a script action, how you can install it on Azure Engine Insight.
Okay.
So you can install Spark 2.2 release candidate version on top of your Spark cluster.
Yep.
If you would like to try this new features available in Spark.
Cool. There's RC4, so it should be out.
It should be out like
anytime.
In a few weeks,
A few weeks, okay, cool. Awesome. All right. I love it. This is awesome. Maxim, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I'm sure we this is number 3. We've probably got some more coming.
In the next one, we'll go into advanced techniques.
Okay.
So even more problems we'll be able to solve in Spark. Yeah.
Yep. And I actually have an idea of a video for you. We'll talk about it after. I'd love to see talk about that after. So it'll be a surprise for the rest of you. So.
interesting.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. That's right. I actually got Maxim intrigued. My goal today. Awesome. Hey. Maxim, thanks for coming. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.